The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio and streaming on Facebook Live. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. And we got quite a show for you. You know, they've had to close down the 3rd Avenue entrance to the King County Courthouse. The presiding Superior Court Judge, Jim Rogers, he's going to join me at 12:30 this afternoon. And I'm going to hold his feet to the fire, too, because I believe judges are a big part of the problem in downtown Seattle, because they keep kicking these guys with 50, 75 convictions back out on the streets. And I think that's a huge part of the problem. So I will hold the judge and his colleagues accountable when I talk to him at 12:30 this afternoon. And then it's against my better judgment, because this impeachment thing, it is just destroying. CNN, during the impeachment, just posted its worst ratings in 3 years. It is a killer. And the American people, it's not in the top 30 things that any normal human being truly cares about. There are people who pretend they care about it, who geek up their obsession because they hate Trump so much. But we'll have a complete recap of where we are on that coming up at 1:30 this afternoon. But we do have an awful lot of local news to talk about, so let's get right into The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. I sense a Dory rant coming on.
Okay, so you heard in Ursula's newscast that Sound Transit, late yesterday, they announced some of the safety findings. It was almost exactly 2 years ago when that train went flying off the tracks down near DuPont, and it was a horrible tragedy. 3 people died. Several others were horribly injured. And then you have what it's cost you and me, the taxpayers, tens of millions of dollars in payouts already. This has been a very expensive mistake. So let's talk about Sound Transit, which I've told you is a criminal enterprise above all else. Above being a transportation agency, Sound Transit is a criminal enterprise. Their Sound Transit One is now 13 years behind schedule, tens of billions of dollars over budget. Their Sound Transit Two, years behind, billions over budget, and yet they had the audacity to have a party, and they have their accomplices in the media who said they were on time and on budget because they did a reset. You know, that's what criminal enterprises do. They have gone over budget by, you know, as I said, tens of billions of dollars. They do not deliver projects on time. And now, of course, they are part of this cabal that is suing the taxpayers because we want $30 tabs. Majority of us, 55%, overwhelmingly said we want $30 tabs. Now, that would cut off some of the heroin that Sound Transit injects into its veins, and that's our money. And let's talk for a little bit about why Sound Transit needs so much of our money. They say it's so we can finish projects. Now, it's also to cover up the graft, the corruption, and the incompetence that reigns supreme within Sound Transit. So, you know the story. This train on its first high-speed run, the Cascade, it was an Amtrak Cascade train, but Sound Transit was one of the overseeing agencies. And there was a 30-mile-an-hour curve, and the train hit the curb at an estimated 79 miles an hour. It went flying off the track, crashed onto I-5 below, as I said, killed 3 people. Now, Sound Transit had a guy, and his job was their chief executive safety and quality officer. That was all this guy's job was, safety and quality, which you would think would help protect us. His name is Salah Al-Tamimi. I don't know how he got his job. I tried to find what credentials he brought. I did a big search this morning to see if I could find out how Salah Al-Tamimi got the gig as Chief Executive Safety and Quality Officer at Sound Transit. I'm still looking into that. I'll report back to you when I find out how he got the gig. But in this independent review that came out last night, here's where they fell short. A project-specific, meaning this train run, safety and security management plan was not prepared. A proposed hazard mitigations were not appropriately briefed. Responsibilities of Sound Transit as the host railroad was not sufficiently understood. Sound Transit staff wrongly thought that WSDOT, not Sound Transit, was responsible for overseeing all activities related to the training of the Amtrak conductor. But it was Sound Transit that was supposed to do all of that. So let's get back now to Salah Al-Tamimi. If your only job is to be Chief Executive Safety and Quality Officer, and a train goes flying off the tracks because it took a 30-mile-an-hour curve at 79 miles an hour, and human beings died, and a distant second beyond the people who were killed and maimed in that crash is the fact that he also has ended up costing, Sound Transit has ended up costing taxpayers $20 million in payouts and counting. That will go up dramatically. So what happens to a government employee who is responsible for the lack of safety that kills three human beings and costs his company, which is you and me, the taxpayers, $20 million and counting? What happens to an employee like that? What would happen in your workplace? Because I'm telling you, if I did something, if I was so bad at my job and I did something horribly neglectful, and three innocent people were killed because of it, if I cost my company $1 million because of my inability to do my job, I'd be fired. I'm guessing you would be fired as well. But that's not how government works. And this is the part of this story that is absolutely mind-blowing to me. Because the early reports that came out last evening were that this guy had been fired. And then they sent out an important correction to the media at about 9 o'clock last night. And they said, we want to stress that Salah Al-Tamimi, that he has not been fired. He's been removed from his job as the chief safety officer. But he's being offered another job within Sound Transit. And it'll be up to him if he wants to accept it. And my jaw dropped. My jaw absolutely dropped. So this guy was hired to be a chief safety officer, was an abject failure. Failure at that. And human beings died. Families have been devastated. One of my daughters knows one of the guys who was horribly injured on that train. People have been maimed. They're going to have lifetime consequences from their injuries. But the people who loved those three lives that were lost, their world is devastated. This guy's job was safety. What does it take to get fired? If you work for Sound Transit, what does it take to get fired? If the safety guy is killing people with his inability to successfully do his job, he's being offered a demotion? And if whatever skill set Salah Al-Tamimi brought to his job that made him the chief executive safety guy, does that skill set translate to any other job at Sound Transit where he's better than any other candidate in the world for this demotion position? I don't know that I've ever had a better example of what a corrupt agency this is, how broken it is, how soulless it is. What do you think the family members of the three dead, what do you think their reaction was last night when they heard that the safety, chief executive safety guy, was being offered another job within Sound Transit? Sound Transit's a criminal enterprise, and they take care of their own. And more than anything, it's a jobs program. They know they're not taking any cars off the streets. They know that they're not reducing gridlock at all. But they are the medium by which $100 billion is being transferred from hardworking taxpayers to create all of these construction jobs, these union jobs, these chief executive safety officer jobs, the 300-some thousand that Peter Rogoff makes, their CEO. And then we got to pay more to send him to anger management counseling because of how he treats employees there. Oh, yeah, we paid for that, too. So, my latest example of what a corrupt, inept agency Sound Transit is. The chief executive safety officer loses that gig, but has been offered another job. Because above all else, they take care of their own there at Sound Transit. It's just too bad the taxpayers aren't counted among their own. The family members of their victims aren't counted among their own. Ah, but Salah Al-Tamimi, he's one of them. Up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Your tax dollars at work.
Which brings me to the other development in $30 car tabs. And again, it's Sound Transit that is getting the $300, $400, $500 that you are being illegally overtaxed on your car tabs. And that's why the people said 55% to 45%. Overwhelmingly, the people said, we want $30 car tabs. And last night, our state Supreme Court divided. 6-3, they said, yeah, you know what? We're going to have an injunction, and you're going to have to. Today was the day, by the way, the $30 tabs were supposed to kick in. So if you just got your renewal tab notice, you're screwed. Because the politicians have rigged the system. Your vote does not matter if you voted yes on this. The will of the voters does not matter. They want your money. And that's all that matters. And so they will do all these legal maneuverings. They'll do everything possible to try to ensure that we keep paying this overvaluation tax on our cars. Essex Porter at Channel 7 covered this yesterday.
The courts throw something out or they put something on hold that people voted for. What do you think?
Well, why are we voting then? I mean, if courts can just overrule the public.
But with so much at risk for Seattle, Mayor Durkin sees it differently.
This ruling vindicates voters.
Jenny Durkin! This ruling overturning the will of the voters vindicates voters. Hey, look. As I said, Jenny Durkin's partner, they won't get married because they don't want to file the financial disclosure that would then be necessary, but her partner's worth an estimated $100 million. Jenny Durkin lives in a $10 million Lake Washington waterfront mansion. Her partner purchased the most expensive real estate parcel on Whidbey Island. Jenny Durkin is filthy rich. She ain't a one percenter. She's a 1/100th of 1%er. And so, again, just the soullessness of somebody who is filthy, stinking rich And here you have voters, you know, in Pierce County, Snohomish County, who get no benefit from Sound Transit. They got to pay $300-$400 a year. Now, to Jenny Durkin, that's tip money. But to families who work hard and are middle class and are working class, that's the difference between them taking their kids on a fun family vacation or not. But Jenny Durkin, in the twisted mind of the left.
This ruling vindicates voters. Because remember, what Seattle was most focused on was vindicating the voters who voted to tax themselves for the transit they need.
Okay, by the way, and she doesn't acknowledge there, of course, that Sound Transit lied to the legislature to get that vote on the ballot and then lied to the voters saying that the average car tab increase would be about $80. They lied to get that vote.
At the hearing, the judge was skeptical of the description of the initiative voters saw on the ballot.
Read that and then read the text of the initiative. Is it misleading?
Okay, so that's what the judge is saying, that the ballot title was misleading. And so, in other words, what they're saying is, you didn't know what you were voting for. You're too stupid, voters. You need smart people like Jenny Durkin and Peter Rogoff and Salah al-Tamimi. You need them to really interpret what you meant, which is insane because the No campaign spent nearly $5 million. There was no Yes campaign, except for my radio show. And they say you didn't know what you were voting for. And, of course, the attorney general is the one who wrote that ballot title, and now he has to defend it. But there's a lot of thinking that Bob Ferguson intentionally sabotaged this 976 initiative.
Confusion over whether the initiative would also restrict local voters from adding car tab fees played a key role in the judge's decision to put 976 on hold.
So I think the very frustrating, I think, for the average voter to see themselves voting over and over again for an initiative and having the political system say that they were confused and they didn't know quite what they were doing.
Yep, that's they're telling us. You're just not as smart as the judges and the politicians. You didn't know that you were voting to cut your tabs to $30, even though it was a $30 car tab initiative. The judge is throwing it out temporarily until the Supreme Court can hear it now, because we are too dumb. I mean, this is a dictatorship, man. I'm telling you, this is a dictatorship around here right now. Votes don't matter. Why vote? And that is your big lead.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Okay, I'm going to talk to a judge about the violence on the streets throughout our region. Do that right after Ursula checks the news. Well, as we've told you, the violence in downtown Seattle on the streets has led to a rather radical decision. The main entrance to the King County Courthouse is on 3rd Avenue, and I saw, when I served jury duty this last summer, I saw what it was like out there. People screaming, people walking around like zombies, bodies over the hoods of police cars. It was a mess. And last week, a defense attorney was randomly, brutally attacked by a guy who had just come up here from Georgia, because you know we're the best place in the country to be a drug street vagrant. And then a bus driver who tried to help was also brutally attacked. And that has led to a radical decision. They're going to close the 3rd Avenue entrance to the King County Courthouse, which is just mind-boggling to me. That instead of cleaning up the streets, we're closing the main entrance to the courthouse. Presiding Court Judge, Superior Court Judge Jim Rogers, he joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Your Honor, thanks for coming back on with me.
Dory, thank you for having me again, and I appreciate you bringing attention to this issue.
Why in the world wouldn't we clean up the streets instead of cutting and running and leaving the streets to the criminals and moving where the metal detectors and the bag scanners are up to 4th Avenue at the courthouse?
Yeah, so I don't think it's an either-or. The decision to close the courthouse, which you rightly said, was done this Monday. I entered an order to that effect after I came in on Monday, the Monday after those assaults you just talked about. against a defense attorney and Metro bus driver, and our judges were in an uproar. This has been going on for some time. It's getting steadily worse. And we're closing the courthouse just for a short period because of our safety concerns, but also to get everyone convened together. And now there are multiple conversations going on in order to address the security situation. In our view, as soon as that is addressed, the order is good until New Year's, but it could be we could open the Third Avenue when appropriate, could be earlier. And I think that it will be addressed. Then we'll start going again. Well, there's already increased police presence outside. I think the message has been heard.
Why did it take a defense attorney getting attacked for an increased police presence? Because I saw what it was like down there when I served jury duty this summer. It was obvious that it's a mess. And it seems like it took a friend of the court getting attacked before we get increased police presence. There have been a lot of people attacked down there.
Yeah, there's an editorial out today by the executive director of the King County Bar noting there's been 160 assaults in the first 10 months of 2019 in that area. You know, I think that our city has focused areas of crime. If you go up two blocks up on the Fifth Avenue, it's like a different country. And
yes,
you walk back down to Third, it's amazing how localized some of the stuff is.
Yeah, let me just follow up on that, because what I said
on my show.
I don't want to engage in hyperbole and say it's a third world nation down there. It's not. But it's not a first world nation on that block. I mean, for that block, it is a mess. And it's not what we should have in a city like Seattle, a place like King County. And so I got to ask.
You're preaching to the choir.
But who's to blame? Who's to blame for this?
You know, you'll anticipate this answer. I'm less interested in who's to blame and more interested in getting solutions to this problem. And I actually do think that there will be solutions to this problem, because I know, in fact, as we're speaking, there are conversations going on about getting it safer between all the police agencies, the county executive, the county council, and the mayor's office. But I do think my point on how different it is I think some people actually didn't see it, didn't appreciate how serious it is.
Gets back to my question, Your Honor, and you're right. I did not like your answer, because unless we understand the root cause of something, I don't know that we can best fix it. And identifying who has allowed this to happen, and if we don't identify that, how in the world can we logically fix this?
Yeah, I agree. And I think one of the answers is to have more consistent security presence out there. And I think that's one of the things that's being discussed. I think these things wax and wane on Third Avenue. I don't think that it's a constant state all the time. Some days you go down there and it's pretty clear, pretty quiet. Other days you go down there and it's very bad. And I think that the attack on the defense attorney and the Metro bus driver, he attacked two people. I think what happened with that was it was caught on video, which so oftentimes is such a more vivid message. I receive all the reports of all the assaults.
No, I know.
I think sometimes the bare report, it's just they keep coming and they keep coming. But when you see a video like that, I think maybe that helped crystallize what happened. So I think it was less about the fact that it was a defense attorney and more about the fact that everyone could see it. It was on the news. I think that really helped.
Okay. I asked the question, because this guy came up here from Georgia. And yep. It has long been my contention that we have made our region a magnet destination because we are the location of least resistance for drug street vagrants. And the word is out. You can shoplift in downtown Seattle. You can commit property crimes and you won't do any time. You can shoot up heroin on the street and the prosecutor has said he won't charge you if it's a personal possession amount. And that's where we got to get down to the root cause of this. And that's where, you know, somebody needs to speak out and say, here's why this is happening. And that's why I want, you know, that's my first question is, why is this happening?
Yeah, well, you won't surprise you to hear me say as a judge that I'm not really in the same position as someone who's on the city council, the county council, or the executive or the mayor's office to speak out about what kind of policy should be put in place to deal with the opioid epidemic that is open and obvious on Third Avenue in front of the courthouse. You know, that's just not what I do for a living.
Okay.
What I do is I address cases as they come before me. But I can address a safety situation in front of the courthouse because, as you've said many times on your show, you know, justice should be open for everyone. People can be scared to come down, jurors, litigants, people who need justice, their case to be heard.
Okay. Well, let's talk about what you do for a living, because, and I brought this up with you a couple of weeks ago, we do have what seems to be a revolving door of justice. We have people who are recidivists, sometimes 50, 75 arrests, and they're kicked back on the streets. And what I view is an increasing leftist judges who have somehow believed that what's best for the criminal is the highest priority and not what's best for the society. And so, you know, I have to ask, some of your colleagues have declared that they are resistance in a robe. That is a quote from a King County judge. And are leftist judicial policies contributing to this problem?
Well, let me answer that in two ways. First of all, let me say that to the extent that the judges who are elected officials, you know, contribute to people who are violent being out, we should accept the blame for that. That's part of our job to evaluate people who are potentially violent. Oftentimes, decisions are made in the rear view, as we talked about with Mr. Chilcott,
right,
where it's just not, and you can't anticipate that somebody's going to do something who's in front of you. Let me also say this. It used to be that the view was to lock everybody up for basically every crime. And in the 90s and in this century, basically there's been a uniting of liberal and conservative views that that's too expensive and not effective. So the nonviolent, and we're talking about violent people here, you are, the nonviolent criminals, people are looking for other solutions that will break the recidivism cycle.
Okay.
And they're looking for drug treatment, things like that. But
right, no, I understand
violent
that.
People, that's a different issue.
But you said locking people up, and what I'm talking about are these recidivists, the 100 most common lawbreakers in Seattle. And
I think you're also talking about people who are violent.
Well, in many cases, but they're yeah, getting kicked through and they're getting put back on the streets after 75 priors. And you say there's a consensus that locking people up doesn't work. I think there's a consensus that what we're doing now is not working. All you have to do is look at Third Avenue right outside the courthouse. And so when I hear, yeah, locking people up didn't work, and I look at what we're doing now and the results on the streets, I know with a certainty that the path we're on now doesn't work.
Yeah, and I'm not going to take a strong position against you here. I think what has to happen is you need real programs that are stringently evaluated to see whether they keep people off drugs and out of the criminal justice system in order for it to work. You need to be really, really careful with the kind of resources you're devoting towards trying to break that cycle. You know, a famous superintendent or warden of the Walla Walla State Penitentiary once said that the penal system is a graveyard of failed experiments. And so it's constantly important that we reevaluate what's working and what's not working. And I'm not going to argue with you that we have a serious problem on Third. Obviously, I agree. I closed the courthouse on that exit and entrance, and we need to deal with
it. Right. I find it a little ironic that there are sirens blaring behind you as we speak right now.
Yeah, right. So that's a constant out here.
Yeah.
So, as you know. So what I'm saying, though, is we're focused on keeping it safe and nonviolent on the blocks in front of the King County Courthouse. And frankly, going down south and north where people are trying to take mass transit to get into the King County Courthouse, the train.
Right. I'm with you on that.
Yeah,
we only have 30 seconds left. This is the King County Courthouse. Jenny Durkin's missing in action. Where's Dow Constantine? I mean, he has three armed sheriff's personnel solely assigned to guard him and drive him around, which is outrageous to me. But I haven't heard one word from Dow Constantine on what's going on at the King County Courthouse. Where's he in all this?
Well, I can't speak for him, but I will say that I'm aware that there are conversations going on with both governments, the city of Seattle and the executive. And I'm frankly aware that Mayor Durkin is taking active steps right now, too. So I think we have to wait a couple weeks to see how this all pans out. But I really do think people are trying to work towards solutions. I don't think there's any public statements being made yet until, you know, people are finished negotiating and getting to where they're going to get. I'm cautiously hopeful that the Third Avenue will be safer as a result of this action, and I'm sorry that it had to come to this.
I am as well. All right. Your Honor, I appreciate your time as always. Thanks for coming on with me again.
Well, again, I appreciate you bringing attention to this issue. Thank you very much.
You bet. King County Presiding Court, Superior Court Judge James Rogers joining us. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can text me at 98973. That's 98973. The Dory Monson Show rolls on. I'm getting a lot of feedback from you on my interview with the judge. And you heard, if you were listening in the last segment, I asked him a couple of times, who do we blame for what's happened to the streets? And as you heard, I told him I blame him and his colleagues in part. But I also blame our prosecutors. I blame our city council, our politicians. And he said, well, I don't want to talk about who to blame. And as I said to the judge, if we don't identify who's at fault for letting this happen, there's no way we can craft the best solutions. Now, some people disagree with me. I got a text from the 206. Cairo must not offer training on blame culture like all other enlightened companies do. Dwelling on blame is grossly inefficient and hurts the collective. It is an immature emotional response. I guess it's ideal for tacos, though. I often wonder how you can look yourself in the mirror after your diatribes. Because what we're doing now for our soft, squishy leftists in the city, it's not working. And there are a lot of people who agreed with me, too. From the 541, oh my, the judge said, locking people up in the 90s was an issue. No one was accosting jurors on the courthouse steps either. It totally works to restrain the bad. How does this nonsense become reasonable to people? Good grief. Thank you for grilling this judge and doing the interview. Yeah, anybody who says the path we're on and what leftist politics around here have done to our city, anybody who says we're on the right track is insane. And the Fastest 15's next.